for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Now, here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It is Monday, May 20th, 2024. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. All you that are still in the business, we're grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format you can listen to anytime and anywhere. So grateful to have our regular contributors, Adam DeSanctis, Les Parker, Matt Graham. Dave Kittle can't be here with us today. He just flew out. He texted me early this morning. He's out at the secondary conference. But we do have Alice Albee back with us. So good to have her back, as well as Alan Pollock, Bill Corbett, and Mark Helm. So we got almost the full regimen of contributors. Grateful for them and their contributions. There is so much to cover on this podcast today. When we talk about timely information, we have CFPB. We have Alice just talked to us about something that was published by Jenny May. We also have the news about the warehouse lines, what happened with Flagstar this last week. And there's so much more. And I'm going to bring up some others that we're going to talk about in the podcast, but we're just so grateful to have you as our listener here. And we're also grateful for our sponsors, Byte Software, designed to be both powerful and flexible. Byte's LOS gives you total control over your loan process, the freedom to do business the way you want it done, and maximize efficiencies with unlimited custom screens and fields. Powerful data governance. There's just so much in this. Flexible APIs, workflow automation you can deploy. Check out the interview we did with Erin D. of Loan People. I appreciated her comments back in January. I was just talking to Bobby there, who runs marketing. And I got to tell you, these guys are just one of the people to be paying attention to. The best part about what Byte does, they don't lock you into long-term contracts. They're affordable, flexible, and can go from startup all the way up to the bigger companies that are out there. Some of the biggest, largest companies out there in the industry. Also, Finastra, speaking about the largest fintech company in the world, Finastra is just that. They have some of the most innovative products across the board. We had Colin Gazinski on talking about trends among lenders and today's current market. We encourage you to pay attention to the interview we did on May 1st. We released last week or week before. Pay attention to that one. It's really good. Also, lender homepage, connect, convert, and close more loans with an AI-powered digital platform that empowers loan officers to connect with more ideal clients, boost referrals, realtor referrals, and close more loans in less time. Check out the interview we did with Rocky and Quay back in December. Still relevant. It's talking about mortgage tech and maximizing production in 2024. Still relevant as ever, even though we recorded that back in December. Then also, Richard Greiser, we appreciate him so much. And all the folks at True, what they're doing, TRUV, unlock the power of consumer permission data to verify income employment for 90% of the U.S. workforce. They are so affordable. They'll cut your costs by 80% from the leader in the marketplace and the market out there. Outstanding, with overall just some of the best customer service you could find. Love these guys and what they're doing to cut costs. That's what we need to be focusing on, folks. What are you doing? What is your vendors doing helping you to reduce costs? Also, thank you to Angel AI. They have their operational costs so low. It is crazy. And they offer and give away. Did I say give? Yes, give away technology. And they'll let you sign up. So go askangelai.com. Askangelai.com. Also, Candid, great CRM tool that Garrett Locklear has created. Check them out. Also grateful for our sponsorship and partnership with the MBA. Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, Mobility MMI, Modix, and Knowledge Group. Folks, grateful for all of our sponsors. This past week, we released on Tuesday the interview with Scott Harris of Experience.com, a topic about how to get yourself ranked higher in searches. This was just one of those podcasts that I could not believe what they are able to do for loan originators. Check them out. Also, on Wednesday, Nancy Bayett of Amerify with the topic of Angel AI and how she's using it to produce more volume than you could buy. She's done over $2 billion of mortgages, and she has always worked hard, but she says what Angel AI has been able to do for her and help her in the business is just over the top. Check out that interview. Again, listen to a winner who is really making things happen. This week, we have two episodes we'll be releasing back-to-back. We're going to be releasing Jennifer Martinez of Cross Country, the topic of mortgage technology and origination. Again, she's a top originator. That'll actually be released today. And then on Wednesday, Chris Bigsby and Jody Hall join us. Chris is with Rice Park Capital. Get some insights into where they're investing money and what they're looking for. So excited about what we have to talk about today, along with our partners and all the podcasts we record. We get so much feedback from you, our listeners, about the relevancy of what we're producing and sending out. We love hearing from you. And so please give us your feedback on topics you want us to cover. I want to make sure we're going down the right path with where we're going. It's all about cutting costs and how can you originate more? What's your mindset? We'll be covering more of that. Let's get over to the MBA with Adam DeSantis and get today's Mortgage Minute. Adam?
Hi, I'm Adam DeSantis. This is the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. The Financial Stability Oversight Council, or FSOC, earlier this month approved and released a report on non-bank mortgage servicing. The report includes several recommendations to Congress and state regulators to address what it considers key vulnerabilities within the non-bank mortgage servicing space. The report's recommendations include having Congress create an emergency fund financed by IMBs, provide FHFA with authority to directly supervise IMBs, and expand Ginnie Mae's Pass-Through Assistance Program, or PTAP. While some of the recommendations could be beneficial by providing liquidity support to IMBs, others, especially the call for an IMB emergency fund, directing FHFA supervisory authority over IMBs, and even higher state-level capital requirements, are not only unnecessary, but would likely increase costs for borrowers. In a press statement, MBA President and CEO Bob Brooksmit stated that while MBA supports national standards for capital and liquidity requirements, layering duplicative supervision requirements or supervisory entities onto a heavily regulated market will add significant cost and complexity. We will continue to engage with FSOC agencies, Ginnie Mae, state regulators, and others to identify effective solutions that do not undermine the IMB business model. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Adam DeSantis. Appreciate your report so much there. I'm really pleased with what Bob Brooksman said in recent comments. We're going to talk about that a little bit later in the podcast, but the MBA and what they're doing is so critical to our future. So check out all that they have going with the Mortgage Action Alliance app. You can download on your smartphone. You need to make sure we're supporting what they're doing on the Hill, folks. If we don't, we can't complain. They're working hard. Are you matching their efforts? Please download the app and make it happen. Also, MBA has got their National Secondary Conference in New York. It started yesterday, and many are there. Looking forward to getting some reports on that. Also, we have the TMBA, Texas Mortgage Bankers Annual Conference in Austin this week. So conferences galore. A lot going on. Check out what we can do to support the MBA with the Mortgage Action Alliance. Let's get over to Les Parker's TM Spotlight and a macro view of the markets. Les, what do you have for us today?
Any old request keeps us waiting, waiting, waiting. How's a lonely boy? He's a lonely boy. Oh, how you are the love that keeps us waiting.
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
The latest tame inflation dropped rates. Many expected a strong report that would have pushed rates significantly higher. Avoid emphasizing one report. Instead, pay attention to coalescing trends. Megatrends suggest the next recession will affect many more countries than usual. Amid the eternal war between bulls and bears, the bulls merely shifted the guillotine a notch. The new 10-year yield range is 467 to 418.
Oh, how you are the love that keeps us waiting.
These views are mine. Wait without diving at tmspotlight.com.
Okay, Les, I got to enjoy your commentary. I always love it. I'm not sure I got that music parody as much. Bill, did you get that one? Did you hear that?
I did not. Oh, I understand Bill. Les's logic when he says it a lot better than when he sings it.
Yeah, I know, me too. Got to give you a little bit. Parker will go back and listen to this comments. He may be even listening live, but who knows? But anyway, love your efforts, Les. You do a great job, and the newsletter is without question outstanding. We're going to be talking about what he covered in just a minute. But if you're wanting to get signed up for the paid version of Les Parker's newsletter, you should sign up for it. Absolutely. I read it every single day. I really do, Les. It really comes out. It's so informative. And he doesn't sing. So anyway, although I like the singing on that, but sign up. It's get the paid version for free by using the word power in the sign-up code. We're going to get into talking about the markets and a lot more. And right after we get to hear from Matt Graham, he sent in his recorded comments on what happened last week and what we have coming up this week. Matt, what you got?
This is Matt Graham with the MBS Live Market Update. Last week was unequivocally all about Wednesday's CPI release, the consumer price index that has taken the place of the jobs report as the most important piece of scheduled economic data on any given month these days. And it did not disappoint in terms of the amount of market movement relative to the level of excitement associated with the report. What I mean by that is the core month-over-month reading came in right in line with the forecast, and even that was enough for a substantial reaction in financial markets. We should also consider that retail sales came out at the same time and was quite a bit weaker than expected at 0.0 versus a forecast of 0.4 the previous month, which was quite high and had resulted in obvious bond selling, was also revised down, but only by 0.1%. Nonetheless, the average piece of commentary out there suggests that the on-target CPI, the core CPI specifically, was the more inspiring of those two economic reports at 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday morning, and the core CPI came out at 0.3 versus 0.3, and the previous month was at 0.4. All in all, this is building a very slight, very modest downtrend in core monthly CPI over the past few months. We still have a long way to go before we get to the 2% inflation target, because year over year core CPI is still 3.6. And of course, if you annualize a 0.3 month over month reading, that would be 3.6 as well. So we need to get that number down to an average of 0.17. which is going to mean that we have 0.1s and 0.2s in core CPI in order to hit the 2% inflation target. Of course, the Fed will likely cut rates before we get there, as long as it looks like that's where we're going. And if you were to ask the Fed right now, they are not entirely convinced that that is the case. We already knew that they were holding off on rate cuts in 2024 so far due to the unexpectedly high inflation in Q1. And this most recent CPI is sort of being chalked up as, yeah, that's nice, but one report doesn't really change the trend that we've seen in the past few months, so we'd like to see more data. With that in mind, it's not too surprising that the bond market hasn't been quick to move in either direction after CPI. Yes, we did have an obvious reaction on Wednesday morning, but it was not a very big reaction, and it was subsequently reversed over the next 2 days in very gradual, technical fashion, not the kind of thing that was clearly associated with any fundamental market mover or news headline that was driving trade. There were other events in the week, but they didn't cause big spikes in volume or volatility, and moreover, the Thursday morning data was arguably in favor of rates moving lower, but instead rates moved higher. As if to say we were pricing out or having a little bit of a correction after the CPI data. The only counterpoint to that is the import price data on Thursday morning was negative for bonds, and it was substantially higher than expected at 0.9 versus 0.3. But while import prices sound like a big ticket inflation report, they almost never move the bond market. I do think that they contributed to the weakness on Thursday morning, but when you look at the five-day chart, it's a very, very gradual bounce back from the CPI related yield lows. And those yield lows occurred right at 4.34, which has been a very prevalent technical level for 10-year treasury yields. Technicals don't predict the future, but they can help us sort of identify what the market is doing in terms of a significant move higher or lower. So if we were going to say that the post-CPI move was significant, it would have had to have broken 4.34. It didn't. And now we're moving back up into that range with 4.34 as a floor and 4.5 as a ceiling. And that range would classify as boring, quote unquote boring, between now and the next big ticket market movers, which arguably don't come in until the first week of June. Because this week there really is nothing significant on the calendar. We do have durable goods and a couple other economic reports, but none of them have been consistent market movers. You could make a case for consumer inflation expectations in the consumer sentiment report on Friday having been market moving events, but this is just the final reading. We've already gotten the flash reading, and the flash reading, or the preliminary reading, did have an effect due to higher inflation expectations. Similar story with the S&P Global's PMI data. In this case, it's the flash reading and generally not as big of a market mover as the final reading, which lines up better with the ISM PMIs in the first week of June. The week ends with an early close on Friday and a three-day weekend for Memorial Day with full closure on Monday. That also tends to affect trader participation and make things generally lower consequence, but sometimes more oddly volatile on those days surrounding the three-day weekend. But again, we're really waiting for the first week of June for significant information and significant market reaction. That's all for now. Back to you.
Good. Thanks, Matt Graham, very much. Be sure to sign up for Matt Graham's MBS Live. You can sign up at mbslive.net. You can use the LOL signup code to get an extended trial period without having to put in a credit card. But you do want to sign up for this, folks. It's so affordable and it's so necessary, especially at this particular time of the year. But yeah, it's really interesting that we do not have some of the significance going on when it comes to market movement. Bill, want to get your thoughts on this and Les's report. Let's start with you, then get over to Alice, Mark, and Alan.
So simplifying what Matt was talking about, I'm looking at some charts while I was listening. So the 10-year treasury, low 380s in January, went up to 4.75 recently and have pulled back. So Matt's talking about technical levels, and the simplistic view is we're a little bit over the middle of that range. Yeah. And that feels like about where we should be. And I think we keep reiterating this every single week of, you know, don't focus on rates and what they're going to do today or tomorrow, because that's time away from getting business. And, you know, Matt's right in terms of the next rate impact could be a ways out on some economic news, but rates seem to have settled into, we're in the low sevens, let's say, and it obviously depends on the loan attributes, but feels okay. And from what I'm seeing with clients and official data seems to support it, there's business being done at these levels.
Yeah, there's a good amount of business being done, even though the MBA has downed the number of the volume projections to 1.8 trillion, still robust. The units are down, but the dollar volumes are up there and there's business to be had. Alice, get your perspective on what you heard today and then move on to some other topics as well, Alice.
It's interesting because one of the things I picked up on a report was the idea that there seems to be more confidence in that rates are, there is going to be a couple of rate drops. As a matter of fact, that was being reported on the news this morning.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm still in the camp of, I don't see a lot of confidence in the numbers. So it still feels like a lot of speculation, but if there's such a thing as more firm, a little leaning. I think you said it, Bill, about we're over the middle, but we're still in the range. So we'll just keep an eye on it.
Keep an eye on it. Stay where we're at. Mark, love to get your thoughts. You're out there running a business again. You're out running. You're back on the treadmill working one of these things. What are you seeing? Attitudes from within the market.
I'm not sure I'm running the business or the business is running me right now. It's probably the latter. Volume has stayed reasonably strong. It hasn't really moved that much when it's a little bit higher in rate, and I don't expect it to improve that much when it goes a little bit lower in rate. We're in a different kind of market. We kind of service rural America, especially rural Central America of the United States, and in that respect. But I don't think, from the numbers I've heard, that putting my 46 years of being in the industry on the line here saying this, I don't think we're going to see any material movement in rate. I think the Fed is waiting for something definitive to happen before they stick their neck out, and I don't expect anything definitive to happen real soon. I'm not even sure that if the rate's going to move that close much, if any, when it gets closer to the election cycle. A year ago, I'd bet on that. Right now, I think we got what we got, and it's going to be this way for a while until something really happens that's indicative of a positive move to rates, and I don't see that coming overnight.
No, I don't see that either. Any thoughts, Alan?
I really don't. I follow the market. I think everyone's made some really good comments. My comments are very consistent as far as the market. It's going to be volatile and up and down in a lot of opinions. It's an election year. It's one of the strangest election years we've ever had. And I think at the same time, people realize that there is no line of sight to the Fed cutting rates. The information, it seems positive about our economy. And I think we've just got to help people figure out ways. By the way, one of the things I was going to mention today is down payment assistance programs have been integrated into other systems. So yeah, we've just got to work on ways to help borrowers understand that this still is a great long-term investment, and they should ask for help to understand how to do it.
Yeah, I've got some questions for you in your segment. When we get to your segment about, are we seeing on AUS as automated underwriting systems? We'll talk about that in just a minute, but I want to move on to some other news that I think it came out that's significant this last week. Alice, we're going to save the Ginnie Mae because we'll go through this and then we're going to go right into your Ginnie Mae with news that you had a part of your segment. But one of the things that came out was the SCOTUS, a U.S. Supreme Court ruling, which is significant. Alice, I want to get your thoughts on this. They opted to say that the funding is constitutional. I question that. In my mind, Alice, what was going on was this was a question of the funding mechanism, not the constitutionality of CFPB. And I think that got missed in a lot of the commentary, Alice, because everyone says if they mess with this, it's going to throw out everything that's done. I didn't see that. I saw those as two separate issues. Other people that were close to it saw it as that, but it is what it is. There's no change. And whoever is the president is going to be able to just continue to run things as they are. Alice, your thoughts?
It's interesting because there's been this constant fight to try and do something to get rid of the CFPB, and the cases start with by entities in a lot of cases that are under audit by CFPB and are trying to fight the issues. It was 2020, I believe, when this ruling came down from SCOTUS that the head of the CFPB could be fired by the president at will. And so that change did rule in favor there. This one, 7-2. So it's hard to argue with this with such a majority of ruling in favor and then the abstention. So I was reading this and it really is about, is the funding mechanism something that is in the control of the House as it should be? And they really felt that it still is. At the MBA, it was interesting. Their position was, as you described, can't we just make the case for whether or not it's going to really cause an upheaval? But it didn't seem like the justices used that in their decisioning.
Yeah, that's what I picked up too. Bill, what's your read on the SCOTUS?
So regardless of what you think about the decision, I'm glad with this and other things when you see significant majority decisions. 7-2, 9-0 is obviously the best because it, at least that keeps it out of the pure politics range. Like you, I don't know that I entirely agreed with their decision, but I do know that they are way smarter than I am. And yes, if there was something that I was going to pick a fight, if you will, with them, this would not be it. But what I also think is, and this may not be the best example, but there's certainly so many other things that are getting to the Supreme Court that are really the fault of Congress. And if Congress did their job in the way entities were created, the way laws were written, so much of what goes on after the fact wouldn't occur. And again, this may not be the perfect example, but I think it's emblematic. We've got a Congress problem in that they just don't know how, and I don't think in a lot of cases are willing to do the hard work governing the country.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you on that, which is, I think this election is going to be so critical, more so than any other. It's always been critical, but you know, look at the Trump rallies and how well attended they are. The guy stays all day in court and then comes out and runs these and draws in 100,000 people and then does 5 rallies over the weekend. It's just like crazy, the level of energy and the support, even in some of the deep blue states, LA, Hollywood, and he's drawing in huge numbers. There seems to be a momentum that is just unstoppable. What does that mean for this as it relates to CFPB? Well, it relates to this. If we do have a Trump presidency, worrisome that is for some of you out there. I think it's a good thing for our country and it's a good thing for what's happening here. It's the first time I've been gone out and stated like that. But I really do believe that we're going to be in for some, the consequences of this decision in a Trump presidency are going to be really interesting. So we'll see what happens afterwards on that. Mark, any thoughts?
Yeah, I got a few. I agree on a whole bunch of points with Bill. I don't think that the situation was one where we really got any answer at all. It's pushing the ball down the road in its own way. But I certainly agree that the fact that the funding we should never have anything that has unlimited funding. Just go to the Treasury and get their money out and move on down the road. That's just obscene in a country that was based on the principles that this one was based on. I do think, however, that I'd agree with Bill 100% that the vote at least was not politically aligned, which was good. Yeah. And normally we get politically aligned votes, and I don't like any of those, no matter which way they go, when they're politically aligned. But the other thing I think, too, is that we had such an issue here because there had been so many rulings and other things that they had done to people that depending on what the Supreme Court did, it could have, and probably this is the reason they went that way, is they could have opened a real bag of worms, so to speak, of people challenging things that have been said and done in the past. But I think the CFPB, for the most part, has been an organization that hasn't served any useful purpose. I think most of the people I know believe the same thing. And it's really a shame that we've had that. And the thing that still nauseates me, I remember when the prior director, the first director, went in and he did his office in Washington, D.C., that the money he spent remodeling his office was just egregious. I could not believe we had a person who spent more money remodeling their office than the President of the United States would spend on a major renovation at the White House. And I thought that was a little bit ridiculous. Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah, that's for sure. One of the things I want to talk about next that's coming up out there is the big announcement that Flagstar has sold their warehouse lending unit. I got called by a American banker for some commentary, which I gave comment. I said, I don't think this is going to result in a liquidity crisis. I think this is going to change some relationships. The question, how committed JP Diamond and the JP Morgan will be there, continue with all of that business. I think they are going to spend 90 days looking at it and then another 90 days shutting down a good number of those relationships that just don't fit with our model, especially with companies that are not making a profit. But I think it's worth noting and some discussion about where warehouse lending and the liquidity that could come as a result of that. Mark, we've been in this game for, you've been 48, I'm in 50 years, and we've watched a few times where warehouse lending became an issue. It isn't right now, and I don't think, in fact, we've got more warehouse lines coming online than going out of business. There have been a few, but not many. But I don't think we're entering into a liquidity crisis. Real quickly, your thoughts, Mark?
I do not think we're going to enter into a liquidity crisis, but I can tell you that there have been at least 3 individuals that have gone to banks in the last year I've known that tried to get a new warehouse line set up and who were hired by the bank, and the bank was going to do great things. And all 3 of the banks closed the projects. And one of those guys was a real close friend of mine. And he and I had a long discussion about it. He said, most banks really don't understand the practice in warehouse lending. And I believe that down the road somewhere, especially if the money center banks like Wells Fargo and Chase and others don't stay committed to the warehouse business, that we will have a liquidity problem. We do have that. Then I think there will be some national fund managed by the likes of Fannie and Freddie, et cetera, that's going to be what allows the business to stay open. And I believe that'll be the future. That's my opinion only.
Yeah, I think we're looking pretty strong for that. Bill, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think before you get to a liquidity crisis level, the first thing I thought of with this is the pricing power. You take a major competitor out, and whether it's Chase decides JP Morgan to up price it or the other competitors, you can still keep availability, but it's going to start costing the lenders more and more.
Yep. It's going to be interesting to see what happens to cost, inflation, everything.
Let me mention one more thing. When I started in this business, and most of the time I was in it, you never were really in a hurry to clear your warehouse line if you had plenty of warehouse line, because you could arbitrage it because you were making a positive yield on your warehouse against the loan. You don't do that now. People are lucky to break even. In fact, some warehouse lines are more than they're getting interest rate on the loans, which makes it really tough for them to stay in business because of that. And I don't know what happened to that. I don't know why it went to that direction, but I certainly see that in a lot of different companies.
And then, of course, you've got the proposal for the Basel III capital requirement.
That's exactly where I was going.
They're seeing some of the writing on the wall and the math isn't working out.
Basel III is the biggest thing, Alice, that you bring up, which is going right into the next topic. And Bob Brooksmith's comments that he made this last week. And if you guys aren't the listeners following Greg Scher, it's actually pronounced Scher, but it's S-H-E-R. If you're not following him on LinkedIn, I strongly recommend you do. Greg's a good friend, someone I talk to regularly. He calls me getting my opinion and intake before he publishes a lot of this. But check out some of the things he wrote. He wrote Broken in Pieces Mortgage. He talked about Bob Brooksmith getting on and speaking in Washington, D.C., and he was really talking about this point, Alice. He took aim at the Basel III overregulation. He says, we have got such a conundrum right now within our industry that the spider web, we're going to put a link to that article in that the MBA published, is written by Adam DeSantis. And it's probably one of the best, I think it's almost word for word, his speech. It's so important that we look at that. Again, going back to the Mortgage Action Alliance app, we all need to get behind what the MBA, and specifically in this case, what Bob is saying about the complexity. We've got, if you don't think it makes a difference calling your legislator or commenting on that, it does. We have got to get so much of this spider web removed for the sake of our industry and sake for the consumer. It's really who it is all about. Alice, I want to get your thoughts right off on that. You read the article, Alice. Did you get a chance to read that?
Yeah, I saw his note, and he's absolutely right in the sense that we've got enough regulation. And I think that you were also sending over the point about the capital gains. Is that the one?
Yes. Yep. It's the Basel III. And it's when we bring that level of review of the financial institution, which goes back to actually to the warehouse lending issue, is it could change capital requirements. And the thing about warehouse lending, viewers, is that it is an intense capital driven business. If you're running into liquidity issues, your warehouse unit may be profitable, but if you're needing liquidity, you will shut down your warehouse unit because there's no faster way to get liquidity back into your bank. And that's the biggest concern that I think comes out of this. Bill, I saw you nodding.
Yeah, and that's where, to your point before, when you look at warehouse capacity in the industry and there's not a liquidity crisis, that can disappear literally overnight.
Yeah.
And
this Basel III could do that. I'm not saying it will. I'm just saying it just is one more straw on the camel's back, my concern. Alice?
Yes, the report too that MBA published in NewsLink to this morning was also targeting that non-bank mortgage companies from their servicing risk is elevated. Oh, yeah. And should they implement even more regulation? And this is, so it's just piling on, and we've got enough. Yeah. Consumers are protected. We got SCOTUS to rule to keep CFPB. So they really just need to leave us alone. Those things don't improve housing. They just make it more expensive.
Yeah, that's Ronald Reagan's famous statement. I'm here from the federal government. I'm here to help. Terrifying words in the world. One thing I disagreed with Bob put out, he says that there's a need for a national housing director. Again, that's coming from someone inside the Beltway. We do not need more another director of anything in this thing. Let's cut some of the cords on it. I want to get over to the other topic, Alice, that you have, and we'll get into your segment. Now, let's talk about the Ginnie Mae announcement that you found this morning.
Yes, it was good news. So for those of you who are familiar with trying to pool government loans as an issuer into Ginnie Mae pools, that we've been handcuffed a bit on being able to really fully utilize e-mortgages and e-notes, because Ginnie Mae wanted any kind of a digital document loan to be within the same pool. So if you're pooling $2 million worth of loans, they all had to be closed digitally with e-loans. You couldn't commingle digital docs with a ink signature note and mortgage. And so for a lot of lenders, there was just not best execution, right? You want to be able to just pull from all the loans that you have, all your Govy loans, to be able to pull together your pools. So they announced, and it makes sense that the secondary conference is going on. So big announcement for that group meeting is that you can now commingle effective with issuance on June 1st. So that was good news for lenders that, one, it's quick. Hopefully all of you are already approved as an e-issuer and can jump in on this. If not, get yourself approved and look at your systems and see when you can start now effectively offering more government loans with e-notes and e-mortgages.
Yeah, very good. Alice, anything else you see on the legislative front that's noteworthy?
I think it was just interesting, the net production income that was used in the recent report on the mortgage banking and the risks, and they showed the net loss that lenders are experiencing now. And they're using the MBA's quarterly reports. Now, essentially, it feels like they're using the MBA's reports to make their case that there needs to be more regulation over our industry. And I thought that was interesting.
So, Alice, what you're saying is that it's not right to have regulatory costs drive up the cost to originate and then use that high cost to originate to circle back to more regulatory impact.
Exactly. They caused the problem. All this regulation caused the problem. And the market swings were playing against us. And then the data stops in Q4 of 2022, which is the lowest point it was. It hasn't been that low through the rest of 23 and the first part of 24. So it was an interesting spin that they've chosen. And I think they forgot that part, their impact on that.
Yeah, very interesting. There's so much stuff going on right now in our industry. And I encourage you to stay in touch with what's being posted out there. Again, check out Greg Shear's comments. Alice, thank you so much for your report. I love so much of what you are looking at out there. Is there anything that you've talked about recently, Alan, that's had any developments on it? Any gotten more legs? I'm looking back over some of the comments that we received from listeners. They all love your report.
Yeah, I think I actually have a segue for Alan, and that is that technology is driving every decision that we make today. You used to be able to just focus on operations or sales, and technology is not just at the table, technology is driving the table and the decisions that have to be made and where the money needs to be spent to gain those efficiencies. And so I think that's, I'll segue over to Alan.
Yeah, it's good, good segue for Alan.
One of the biggest discussions out there.
Yeah. Alan, we're talking about it constantly. Everything that we're seeing about is what can we do from a technology standpoint? We've got to reduce costs. And we keep coming back, Alan, to a technology solution. We've got to automate more of the processes or it's just, you know, or we're in trouble. Right now, the cost originates around $13,000 and 60%. Mike Fratantoni says 60% of that goes towards originators. So that leaves about $5,000. Got to get that cost significantly down. Your thoughts?
Yeah, completely true. And Alice, thank you for the segue. It is true. It's not on the table, driving the table. Oh, man, I wish there was a silver bullet solution to reduce that price. And the challenge is our industry has so many technology vendors and the cost of doing business in mortgage is so extensive. And as a technology vendor, and I want to first address what Alice said, so I'll come back to this, David. Maybe we chat about it for a moment.
Yeah.
But Alice, you're right. Everything is based on technology right now. Everything from, you know, vendors that handle warehouse line risk mitigation and management to vendors that manage MI risk mitigation to the pricing engine to how to stay in line with compliance, the analytics. It is everywhere. You can't do business without a digital lending experience, a point of sale platform. You can't do business without acquiring third-party technology information. but that comes at a price. And then just back office, right? How do you stay in with compliance? How do you, as a loan officer, understand the rules of engagement? Meaning you may move around from different organizations. How do you know what all the rules are where you work? And then everybody has to go through technology and information security training. Every technology is a part of everything. So I'm happy you brought that up. Thank you. And actually, Alice, I wrote down your quote. So if you need any copyright rights, that let me know, because I'd like to reuse that quote. But David, it's funny because some of the things I wanted to talk about today actually touch on exactly what we've been talking about. Great minds all think alike. Let me just roll right into it if you think that's okay. Now, yes. I have one non-mortgage topic I wanted to bring up just because tech is taking over our lives. And by the way, when you're thinking of how to create a new business in our industry or any industry for that matter, you have to consider, what is that unicorn idea, that Uber-ish type of idea? That's a real word in the dictionary, by the way. So anyways, get this, returns feeling like a hassle. Skip the trips to the post office, FedEx office, or UPS store, because now you can get it done in a few taps. And I'm reading that verbatim from the news. So basically what it says is that now with Uber, you can pack your product for return and a delivery driver will pick up your sealed prepackaged package and drop it off at a local post office, FedEx, or UPS store for you. You can track it. Just consider it done. So we're going to continue to see more things like this. I know in the mortgage industry, David, there were mobile notarizations, right? Before some of the digital technology we had came out. These are just such cool ideas. And we're going to continue to see more of these. Check that out. Pretty cool.
That's the only chance I get to go take a break. I need to get out. But it's true because you get so busy sitting here working virtually in our offices, in our homes, that we don't get a chance to even go to the UPS store to drop the things off. So it's interesting that Uber is capitalizing on that.
It's a treat, right? To get out of the house to sometimes you just say, I think I need gas in my car. And you just leave for 30 minutes.
You go add 5 gallons. But, you haven't driven anywhere.
Yeah, I'm going to top that off. But anyways, let's move on. And I wanted to start off, by the way, congratulations to anyone whose children graduated or nieces or nephews or grandkids that graduated last week. It was a huge graduation week. I had a daughter that graduated high school, and I'm sure many of you had some relatives or friends that did. So congrats to all those graduates, the next generation of unbelievable mortgage executives and mortgage everything are up and coming. So let's give them opportunities. Let's open up internships. Let's find ways to open doors and help them out as they continue. So now let's get into some mortgage stuff, David. I thought this was really cool. Poly, which as we know is a PPE product, they now have integrated with nCino's mortgage suite, which I thought was really cool. In addition, Down Payment Resources, which I mentioned a little bit earlier, just integrated with ICE Mortgage. So now their options or solutions that they have are now embedded into ICE. And get this, David, brand new topic. So this is a press release, again, about ICE, and it's on the topic of product and pricing engine, so PPE. Now, many people know in the very early days, there weren't a lot of pricing engines out there. There were some custom-made underwriting engines, Solid and not Commerce Velocity. Anyways, there was a couple out there, right? But then it was Nilex, which I was a co-founder of, and Optimal Blue. And there weren't a lot at that time. There were some. Anyways, ICE was one of them. And ICE, when they created their pricing engine, had acquired a technology and then expanded upon it. That was called EPPS. ICE has now, this is their press release, announced investments focused on growing its mortgage secondary market offerings and enhancing the Encompass digital lending platform's native product and pricing engine. Now, I know that's a jumbled soup of words. Let me just get down to the nitty-gritty details. In their press release, they basically said that they talk with mortgage industry professionals every day. And one thing they've made crystal clear is a pressing, growing need for a stable, accurate, and well-capitalized loan product and pricing engine. What they basically were trying to say is that all the systems that are out there are not meeting everyone's needs, and they're extremely expensive. And they're not nimble enough. They're not customizable enough. Now, I'm not saying I agree. This is what ICE put in their press release. And they say that they can do it at a lower cost and they can offer it better. So what they're saying is to meet the need, ICE is investing a significant amount to dramatically enhance their current PPE within the Encompass lending platform. And they're actively engaging with a select group of industry leaders. Wink, they didn't call me. But I'm extremely interested in looking forward and hearing more about this. Hats off to Encompass. Innovation is on the birth, on the growth. Now, David, let's talk about FinLocker, another press release. And I love the guys over at FinLocker. I've known them for a very long time. They just closed their Series B funding round. They secured $17 million in investment. And what they've said is it's obviously going to bolster business development, strengthen their existing partnerships, and fuel the development of their FinLocker app. If you don't know about FinLocker, go check it out. I think they're just absolutely opportunistic for financial institutions to leverage their technology, as a personal opinion. But get out there and check it out. All right, David, this one, and then I have one more topic after this, and I know you want to ask me a question. So after this item, if you'd like to, I can hold off on my last item. Yep. Mortgage brokers sent people's estimated credit, address, and veteran status to Facebook. And this is what we all fear. So there's a company, it's actually a publication called The Markup. And what they do is they do investigative reporting, data analysis, and they challenge technology to serve the public good. So they went out and tested more than 700 websites that offer loans for people looking to purchase or refinance. They looked at major online brokers to lesser regional lenders. And what they found in more than 200 of them is that data was shared with Facebook. Here's how they found it. These companies embed what's called a metapixel. So we all know how like Google Analytics tracks, it creates a little fake image. Sometimes it's in your email. It was a Facebook pixel. And it shares the visitor's information that they're filling out online. And I know you probably don't even want to listen to the rest of this. So if a user fills out a mortgage application or requests quotes for mortgage rates, that pixel track took all that information about credit, veteran status, occupation, the type of homes they wanted. It took co-borrower names, bankruptcy status, homeownership status, citizen status, specific homes and the addresses of those homes. You believe that? Yes. So we've got to be careful. We've got to do better. Hire consultants, advisors, ask for opinions. That little extra bit of money you're going to spend is going to save you lawsuits and issues, etc. They didn't name anybody yet, but there's over 200 of them. So yes, a very interesting information. Now, before I move on to my last item here, David, I know you said you wanted to chat about something. So why don't I just toss it back over to you for a quick moment?
One of the things that we're talking about, we know there's Lender Toolkit. We have friends over any one of the services that are trying to automate the underwriting process. Most expensive part of the process, what's going on. Love to get your thoughts. Are you hearing of any new vendors coming to market offering basically any type of automated underwriting solution?
So the short answer is yes. I don't know if I can disclose, but what I can say is there's a lot of things with AI coming out. Everybody that is interested in building something for automated and underwriting are putting all their money into that investment. And they're getting small groups to test it. Everybody believes that they're going to make a move on that. There's people trying to build new types of LOS systems and different ways to look at data. I think our market is overcrowded with people. And I mentioned this last week, David, with people saying they're an AI platform, but they're just leveraging a little bit of AI to do one thing. We've got to be careful about what AI means. And we do have to think different. And we do have to find ways, as Alice mentioned, tech is involved in everything. How do we lower those costs? By the way, the last topic I was going to mention today, David, and let me continue with this, was a website for automation called browse.ai. And if you go there, their pricing is very reasonable. They already have, so that it goes on the internet and it scrapes data. So if you wanted to quickly go build a mortgage industry job board right now, you can build automated bots with no coding at browse. It's browse.ai. And you can also take that data, tell how often to create these searches, tell it what to scrape, and then tell it to go stick it in Airtable, as an example. Airtable is a free online database. And then you can build a free chatbot that connects to that. And now you can serve off, you know, chatting for jobs. Or you can automate broker registration. You can automate all types of things, right? Automate components that you want to send to the CRM, because there are lenders out there. Some of you listen to our podcast that actually sit in the middle of your own vendors. You control some of your own destiny. So check out browse.ai. Completely automated scraping and workflow management. And they have pre-built robots if you want. They're integrated. And I just mentioned that on the heels of your question, David. We're going to continue to see tech companies that are leveraging tech like this or building their own and are doing all different types of things. What's unique about our industry, I'll just leave it on this last point, David, is we've got the most amount of PII data than any other industry. And we've got to be extremely careful about what we're sending where, what servers it sits on. Again, it doesn't mean we can't do this stuff. We just have to be very careful about what we're doing. And there's a way to architect these solutions so that data is preserved and protected. But outside of that, David, the amount of AI tech we're going to continue to see over the next 24 months is going to be huge. Is it going to lower our costs right now? No, not many people. I know Angel AI is giving it out for free, but not everyone can leverage that tech. I think we're not going to see the cost drop so quickly. That's the difficult or the bad news about all of this.
A lot of money flowing into it. I had a privilege of meeting with John Guzzo over the week, this last week, and of Keefe, Bruett, and Woods, KBW. And I'm getting some analysis that they're sending in reports of where they're seeing opportunities, where they have vested. Follow the smart money, folks. If you want to see where you should be looking as far as technology, follow the smart folks like KBW, see what they're investing in, and also like Rice Park Capital. Listen to that interview that we've got coming up this week. Alan, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate it. You can reach out to Alan at tms-advisors.com. And good report. Folks, that wraps up this week's podcast. So grateful for you being here, sharing it out with so many of your colleagues. We're so impressed with the downloads that we're getting and the views. It's amazing. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Byte Software, Finastra, Lender Homepage, Truve, Angel AI, Candid, Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Lenders One, The Mortgage Collaborative, Mobility MMI, Modix, and Knowledge Coop. Have a great week, everybody. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.